in which we look for and find the upside to inflation and to the supply chain sclerosis. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday today, the 8th of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. You are going to get a bunch of numbers in our lead story today. That is the downside risk of trying to quantify what's going on in the American labor force. So bear with us, if you would, as we tell you about this morning's JOLTS report. That's the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, which came to us courtesy of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I'm going to let Marketplace's Sabri Benishore do the heavy lifting on the numbers and what they mean.
4.2 million people quit their jobs in October. That makes 15 million since August. Daniel Fabiani was one of them.
I felt like I had plateaued at my job and compensation was becoming an issue.
But he was being super picky looking for a new job. Wanted a challenge, more money, a better title. And in this labor market, he got it. All of it.
I wasn't, accepting just any old job that came my way. It took a good 13, 14 months to land this new job.
The number of people like Fabiani who quit fell ever so slightly in October, but it's still way higher than before the pandemic. The largest share of people quitting, about 45%, is happening at small businesses, says Constance Hunter, chief economist at KPMG.
It makes one question, what are some stylized facts we know about smaller firms? They probably don't have as many perks and benefits.
That's one reason Hunter says we'll see strong wage growth through next year. David Miracle sees that too. He's chief U.S. economist at Goldman Sachs.
The ratio of job openings to people unemployed is still very, very high.
11 million openings for 7 million unemployed people. Earlier this year, annual wage growth was at about 5 to 6%.
Because we still had the enhanced federal unemployment benefits in place, a lot of unemployed workers were not looking as hard as they are now or were somewhat less willing to take a job.
Now, 5 to 6% wage growth would have made inflation worse, says Miracle. But now wage growth is settling down to about 4%, which he says won't push inflation too much. Nick Bunker is economic research director at Indeed, a marketplace underwriter. For him, the big question now is Omicron.
And what that will do to the behavior of consumers, workers, and employers.
In general, though, he says if you want to know what's going on with the job market, keep an eye on who's quitting. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, kind of sideways, actually. Either traders and their algorithms are just tired from the last 2 days of buying, or they're just waiting to see what Friday's inflation report is going to be. We will have the details when we do the numbers. As I just said, the November Consumer Price Index comes out Friday morning, so get ready for another round of is it transitory or is it lasting? Spoiler alert, we still don't know yet and won't know on Friday. But look, nobody likes rising prices. Almost nobody. Marketplace's Matt Levin explains why if you're a borrower, that is, if you've got a mortgage or a car note, or if you're the Treasury Department of the United States of America, you might not mind the I word.
It's hard to picture a candidate for president running on this message. Vote for me and you'll get more inflation. But way back in 1896...
You shall not press down upon the brow of labor this crown of thorns. You shall not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold.
That's William Jennings Bryan's famous cross of gold speech. Bryan wanted to untie the dollar from gold to get prices to rise. At the time, the U.S. was experiencing major deflation, which upset a particularly important voting bloc, farmers with mortgages. Leo Hanyon is an economics professor at UCLA.
Borrowers are actually now getting the short end of the stick because they're paying back their debt with dollars that are more valuable than when they borrowed.
Even though he lost the election, Bryan's logic kind of holds up, even today. Let's say 5 years ago, you got a $300,000 mortgage to buy a house at a fixed interest rate. Because your lender couldn't foresee COVID-induced inflation, those monthly payments are worth less to the bank.
So this ends up being a wealth transfer from lenders to borrowers.
People with car loans and large corporations that issue longer-term bonds also benefit from inflation, says Dean Baker with the Center for Economic and Policy Research, as does the federal government.
If it's the case that we have 5% inflation, the interest rate on government debt, 10-year debt, is now like 1.4%, government's getting a real good deal at borrowing less than the inflation rate.
Just how good a deal inflation is for any borrower will depend on the other stuff they spend their money on, and whether they can convince their boss to give them a raise to keep pace. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Come on, when was the last time you heard that Cross of Gold speech, huh? All right, so from the Federal Reserve tomorrow, we're going to get its quarterly snapshot of household wealth. And we should say here that household wealth is not household income. It's the value of things that Americans own, including, as it happens, stocks and real estate. And with so many other things in this economy upside down in this pandemic, well, this has also made it hard to figure out where we stand financially. Marketplace's Lily Jamali has been trying to find the answer.
In the pantheon of data sets generated by the Fed, household wealth hasn't always gotten much attention. But former Fed economist Claudia Sahm says that's changing.
Because the economy is being so weird. If you look at employment, it's weird. If you look at consumer pricing, it's weird, right? So you have to like really try and put the pieces together and tell the story. But none of us actually know exactly what the right story is.
Going into the pandemic, household wealth was moving steadily higher, says Mississippi State finance professor Tom Miller. He's surprised that given the current boom in the housing market, stocks make up most of American household wealth at 30%.
I would have thought real estate was a bigger chunk. But the stock market run-up since roughly 2016 has had a big impact on, and retirement funds have grown over time.
And he expects to see more of that growth. Claudia Sahm points out that for people without big portfolios, the last year has also been a time of wealth building, just on a smaller scale. UC Berkeley economics professor Martha Olney says the federal government's historic pandemic stimulus assistance gave people more to spend and to save, but Olney warns that is a temporary change.
Wealth is so unevenly distributed in this economy. And so a lot of families having $2,000 in their savings account instead of $0 in their savings account just isn't going to move those numbers much at all.
And if savings are in cash, that wealth is more likely to disappear if inflation heats up. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
I don't know if you saw this in the New York Times the other day, but there's not enough cream cheese in the greatest city in the world. A schmear shortage, if you will, for New York bagel eaters. Yes, a niche example, I grant you, but clearly the supply chain mess has trickled down to all the various corners of the economy, and a lot of businesses just can't get the goods they need. And that is not good. On the other hand, though, the jankiness that is this supply chain right now has created opportunities for some smaller businesses because they are small and more nimble. Marketplace's Justin Ho has that one.
We know the congested supply chain is affecting car production, imports of furniture, electronics. Honestly, is there anything it's not affecting?
There's this crazy tuxedo shortage in America right now.
Ken Gidden runs Rothmans, a men's clothing store in New York. He's been able to navigate that shortage because he has more vendors than his larger competitors. Big department stores sell to the masses, whereas Rothmans curates the clothes it sells and the suppliers it buys from.
I'm staring at a board with 100 different vendors listed on it. You know, in each category, I might have 10 guys.
Because of that long list of suppliers, the tuxedo shortage wasn't such a big deal for Rothmans.
We were there to come through for a lot of wedding parties when, you know, the big department stores weren't able to do that.
Rothmans has another advantage over big department stores. They have to buy thousands of products at a time from suppliers. Rothmans doesn't.
Maybe they have 100 units left of a of a great sport coat rather than the 10,000 that a department store was looking for. And so we may be able to buy that and buy it maybe at a better price.
Other small businesses have gained an advantage because they bulked up on inventory months ago.
I was just afraid to be in a situation where, you know, we sell out and then I can't get more product out to customers for months.
That's Brandilyn Green. She runs Voice of Hair, a company that makes hair products for women of color. At the start of this year, she ordered extra plastic bottles, caps, and labels for the new shampoos and conditioners she planned to launch so that her manufacturers had what they needed to produce them on time.
They might be ready to produce, but if they don't have packaging, they're not going to start your order. So then you'll wait months and months just for that packaging to come in.
Stocking up on packaging paid off. Green launched her products in July. She was able to start selling them on Amazon. Meanwhile, a lot of her competitors were struggling.
I mean, I have definitely seen like other brands who sell similar products where they just weren't able to do any holiday sales, or they've been out of stock for months. I'm in Facebook groups where people were asking to buy packaging from each other.
Some small businesses have been able to step up and deliver products when their larger competitors can't.
Really, the supply chain thing has been more of an opportunity than a problem.
Jennifer Curran is the CEO of Sadie Rose Baking Company near San Diego. She recently got a call from a large local client of hers. It needed partially cooked pizza crusts, but its regular vendor couldn't deliver.
In fact, we already were making a very similar product, so we were able to do it right away, although it was in pretty large quantities, so we had to ramp up pretty fast.
The bakery had been making its pizza crust by hand. Because of the new demand, Michael Lippman, Curran's husband and the bakery's president, has been modifying a dough production line to make pizza crusts more efficiently.
We're having some special dies made to where it will cut perfect 10-inch circles for us, and the line will then take them and put them onto pans, and then we bake them after that.
As a result, he says the bakery will be able to churn out pizza crusts faster. It also owns its own delivery trucks, so no hassles with shipping. And it's a lot closer to the client than the old supplier.
There's not much of a supply chain. It's from us to somebody down the street or up the highway, a couple of exits.
Bottom line, because Sadie Rose Baking Company is a small business, it can make decisions quickly.
It's just me and my husband, and we can have a quick talk between the two of us, loop in our operations manager, and then go ahead and start testing a product the next day.
Curran says the new line of business is going to help the bakery's sales bounce back closer to where they were before the pandemic. I'm Justin Ho for MarketPlace.
Coming up.
We're not going to go back to that pre-pandemic world.
Yeah, no, we're not. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 35 points today at 10%, 35,754. The NASDAQ up 100 points. The century mark, 0.6%, finished at 15,786. The S&P 500 tacked on 14 points, about 0.3%, 47.1. The online styling service Stitch Fix issued second quarter and full year guidance that disappointed. Company also fell short of expectations for the number of active members. Stitch Fix chopped off nearly 24%. The streaming platform Roku reached a multi-year agreement with Google to keep YouTube and YouTube TV on its service. Google had been threatening to pull it. Roku surged 18% on that news. The average price of a gallon of gas nationally dropping just a touch. Today, it's $3.34 a gallon. That's according to AAA. A week ago, 4 cents more per gallon. A month ago, 8 cents more. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note, 1.53%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Here comes a good news, maybe not so good news story. The number of kids in the juvenile justice system in this country has dropped a lot in the past 20 years, from more than 100,000 in the year 2000 to around 35,000 now, which is great. But states say it's challenging and it's expensive to get the housing and the mental health care that the kids who remain in the system need. Alisa Roth has more on that.
The Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake Schools, as they're known, share a campus in a remote part of Wisconsin, about 3.5 hours north of Milwaukee. The people held there are juveniles. Many are 15 or even younger. They've been sentenced to the facilities by a judge to live there, go to school there, and get mental health care there. And while fewer kids are being held there now than there were a few years ago, there are still extreme racial disparities. The majority of the kids are Black, and Native American kids are also overrepresented. These are kids with high needs. Just about all of them have experienced trauma. A lot of them have been diagnosed with things like anxiety and depression and ADHD. They have trouble controlling their impulses. And it's challenging to provide for all those needs.
If you had to see all those clients a week, your entire day would be full of clients every day, but you don't have that much time.
Daniel Cohen remembers how big his caseload was when he started as a psychologist at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake in 2014.
You'd have to see them all, but some people would require once a week, and you only have so much time, so you have like triage. So you might be able to see them every other week or once a month, which are just check-ins.
He left in 2016. He says when he was there, the care mostly ended up being nothing more than crisis intervention. Conditions got so bad, the legislature voted to close down the facilities. But as of now, they're still open. Tracy Johnson oversees mental health care there now. She says these days, treatment starts as soon as kids arrive on site.
We assign them a clinician so that psychology staff member will follow them throughout their stay at the facility.
She says 16 staff members offer individual therapy, group therapy, and crisis management, among other services, which is part of why it's so expensive to keep kids there. The current budget is $1,154 a day per kid. The drop in the populations of Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake is good news for juvenile justice reform, but it makes the current system much more expensive. The facilities combined have space for more than 500 kids. Today, there aren't even 50 there, 38 boys and 10 girls. But the fixed costs, from security staff to heating, all stay the same. And next year, the price per kid is expected to go up to $1,178. Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake have been the subject of numerous investigations and lawsuits over things like physical abuse and excessive use of solitary confinement. The Department of Justice did an investigation, though ultimately didn't file any criminal charges. Juvenile Law Center and the Wisconsin ACLU filed a lawsuit in 2017. Now there's a federally appointed monitor, and conditions have reportedly been getting better.
Chief among these are the elimination of pepper spray.
Kate Burdick is a senior attorney at Juvenile Law Center.
The near elimination of strip searches of young people, reductions in the use of solitary confinement, and improvements to the physical plant.
But Burdick says the kids still report.
They often don't have much to do. They're bored. They're disconnected from their families. There is inadequate programming. At the end of the day, it's really not a healthy place for them to be growing up.
The question is where the kids should go instead. Most of the kids held at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake are from Milwaukee. So right now, they're more than 200 miles from home. Current plans call for building new facilities that would let them get the care they need closer to home. And in her most recent report, the monitor emphasized that plans need to move forward soon. But those plans are still being negotiated, which means any new construction is likely years away. I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
There's a new report out from a company called Upwork. They connect, they say, businesses with independent workers, freelancers, right? Anyway, their research shows freelance workers have had $1.3 trillion in earnings so far this year. And to be clear, we're talking about skilled, mostly remote freelancers who left full-time jobs looking for more flexible work. The study also found that 59 million Americans did some kind of freelance work the past 12 months. That's about 36% of the entire American labor force. So we got Upwork CEO Hayden Brown on the phone this morning to talk things over.
I think there was a huge talent shortage for skilled professionals before the pandemic. And as people have gone through the last year and a half plus, they have really realized that they can tap into remote talent in new ways. And that is what all the skilled professionals on our platform are doing. They work remotely for these businesses. And so the world has really woken up to the idea that they can close critical skill gaps with these folks. And I think that is a tectonic shift that we're not going to go back to the world pre-COVID in that regard.
Okay, put a pin in that not going to go back thing, because I do want to get there. But should I be a talented professional looking for other opportunities? How does it work?
It's pretty easy, actually. You create a profile online. You talk about the skills and expertise you have, and then start pitching yourself to jobs that are applicable to you and waiting for invitations from clients to come to you. And then as those come in and as you win projects, we do all of the work on the back end so that you're getting paid. We create the contracts. We have a lot of systems to ensure that you actually don't have to worry about any of the aspects around running your business. You just do the great work for clients and enjoy being an independent freelancer.
And for which you get some cut, right?
That's right. We take a cut of the earnings as our fee for doing those services.
Okay, so what kinds of firms are the clients? Are these sort of small businesses like mom and pop shops? Are they mediums? I mean, who might I be working for, me, the talented professional looking for new opportunities?
It's everybody. That's one of the compelling things I think about this work right now and on our platform is people can do incredible work with incredible businesses that are really tapping into these professionals.
Okay, so let's get back to the pin I put in the whole going back thing. It seems clear that the American labor market and the way we work has changed. Do you believe, I guess you do believe that it has changed now forever?
It has, Kai. It absolutely has. I think people experimented during the last year and a half with remote work, formed new habits, broke old ones. They realized that things that previously were totally normal, like the daily commute or listening to colleagues while they were working in the office, they can't imagine going back to those things now. And that's true for both professionals and for the businesses seeking to work with those professionals.
Bigger labor market question for you. If I say we have a labor shortage in this economy right now, what do you say?
I think we have a labor mismatch. Businesses have been looking in the wrong places for the talent they need. And as they're realigning where to look for that talent, such as in the independent workforce, they're actually finding those skilled professionals that they didn't know existed in those pockets.
You know, so we did an interview the other day about the mommy track and how remote work and hybrid work can really be detrimental to women who are on the hybrid work track because they're not in the office, not a lot of FaceTime and all of that, which I'm sure you're versed in having done this for a long time. But one of the things I talked about was there are some companies, and I cited JP Morgan and Jamie Dimon and the banking industry and law firms. They're like, you got to be in person, man. If you want to compete in this industry, you got to be in person. What do you say to that?
Those times have changed. I think that companies that really figure out and lean into how to rewrite the rules of leadership, of mentorship, of customer interfacing in a much more distributed and remote first way, augmented with FaceTime, FaceTime doesn't completely disappear, will find themselves competing and operating in ways that bring in women and diverse talent and actually let them compete more in their spaces. I think they're going to have a hard time keeping up with those competitors as those competitors forge ahead.
Last thing, and then I'll let you go. Does Upwork use some of these talented professionals looking for new opportunities?
2/3 of our team is independent talent.
Oh, that's funny.
So we live and breathe this every day, and we know exactly what these team members are capable of.
Hayden Brown, she's the CEO of Upwork. Ms. Brown, thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Kai.
This final note on the way out today, you can call this, I suppose, inflation adjacent. Saw it in the Washington Post this morning. A report from the Conference Board. They're the same people who track consumer confidence. We've told you about that a zillion times. Anyway, a different report from them this week on wage expectations for next year. They figure companies are going to budget 3.9% for salary increases next year, which is great until you can tell me what inflation is going to be next year. All right, we got to go. But first, of course, your moment of economic context. Call this one Internet Zeitgeist Edition. Google, as you know, puts out a list of its top trends and searches every year around this time. The top how to ask search in the United States this year, how to ask for a raise. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Liana Squillace, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Tirado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.